one reason I need this is because I just feel so much of the Spirit tonight. I might need to hold on to this and see where we go. I'm definitely stepping out the boat tonight. This is not my comfortable place, but I did feel a bit sorry for Bimby, so that was one reason I said yes. And I think sometimes we can say no because we think it's not us. And actually, it's a bit of a cop-out because Jesus always wants us to take that step and risk sometimes. So this is me. And on my fridge at home, I have that Oscar Wilde quote, which we've used here before. Be yourself, everyone else is taken. So here I am. I thought I'd just begin with a little bit of potted history of who I am. You might not know much about me and things, so I thought that just will set the scene. My mum didn't get married until she was in her 30s, and unfortunately she had 6 miscarriages before me. And at the age of 43, she produced me, and so I was a very precious baby, very precious child. My mum did everything for me, and I was quite shy. And I think as much as I had a loving mum and dad who were really good to me, I don't think doing everything for me really helped my confidence. So I grew up as quite a sort of unconfident person, really. I managed. And my first experience of church came when I went to a Church of England primary school. I grew up in Putney in southwest London. And as a Church of England school, we trotted off to church every now and again and walked up to Putney Bridge and went in the church. And all I could remember is church was very solemn and you had to be really quiet and it was all quite boring. And that's all I can really remember. And so going on, I went to secondary school in Fulham, and church didn't apply to that, so church never applied in my life. My parents weren't Christians. I never went to church, and I think I was probably more interested in Fulham football ground along the way where the footballers used to come in and out. Going on a bit, I left school. I took O-levels. I didn't do very well because I just hadn't got confidence. I don't think it was that I couldn't do it, but I just didn't have the confidence I was clever. And so I left school, did some O-levels at night school, and where I worked, there was this young man who was working his way through all the women and came to me and said, would I like to go out? And I said, not really. And eventually he wore me down and I thought, can take my chemistry homework and he can help me. And that's what I did, and the rest is history. We got married in 1966 and we went to live in West London, and we were both working for Beecham's then. Or Unilever by then. Right, okay. Yes, Keith worked in the hair colourants department. I worked in the library. And I phoned him up one day and he said, I can't stop, I'm just dying. And so I said, okay, I'll say goodbye now. when we first met Keith, he was attending a church. Really, he'd started off going to a youth club but with a friend, and then when he'd moved to Putney from Fulham, carried on going to church because he sang in the choir. And so I joined him and went to church, but for both of us, really, it was just part of your social calendar. It was just something we did on a Sunday, and that was it, really. So when we got married, we looked for the local church. We went to the local church, and I think we only went once, and the curate said, oh, you must come round to my house for an evening. And we thought, well, that's really nice, you know, get to know them. And we went round, and there were these other people there. And they weren't really interested in us as people. All they wanted to know was, what are you going to do? Are you going to do this? Are you going to join that? I was, whoa, you know, oh, I don't like this. And Keith felt the same. So that was the end of church. We stopped going and life just carried on. And that was it. Jumping ahead a few years, Keith became a Christian in December 1974. He has his own story of how. And I thought, oh no, back to church again. Oh no, Sundays now, you know, can't do the social bit. And oh, anyway, by this time we had Sarah, who was two, and I was just pregnant with our second child. So I was trying to think whether I actually went to the odd family service before I became a Christian or not, and we're a bit debating on whether. I think I went to a couple of family services there. He joined a really wonderful church, charismatic church at that time, and that's where we were. And he spent 6 months trying to argue me into faith. And it always ended up, leave me alone, I don't want to. And this very wise lady said to him at the home group he was going to, back off. By about that time, it got to July, and I was just almost full term with Simon. And during that time, he turned transverse breech, and so they said, you're going to have an elective cesarean. And I thought, oh, no. And I was very nervous about it, really nervous. And I went into hospital the day before, and I think the sister there recognised that I was anxious and things. And the next morning I was being prepped for theatre and everything, and she came up to me and she said, could I just pray for you before you go to theatre? And I thought, oh, anything, you know, I'm in this state, anything. And she just prayed a very simple prayer over me. And I have never, ever in my life found such peace as I found in that moment. And it was just so, so real. And I went off to theatre and came back with a baby boy. And it was at that point, just in those couple of days afterwards, I really thought, God's saying to me, he's real. He's really real. And this is him. It's not about somebody trying to argue me or tell me with persuasive words. It was just an experience of him. And so about 2 days later, I walked into the loos of West Middlesex Hospital and gave my life to Jesus. And I had a new creation of a baby boy, and I became a new creation as well at the same time. And it was wonderful. And the curate from the church, where Keith was quite a regular member now, came to visit me, and happened to be John Hughes, who's the father of Tim Hughes, the worship leader. And he was so excited, really excited. So we started going to church as a family. It was a wonderful church. We had great teaching and beginning to sort of move into things of the Spirit. And eventually I joined the same home group as Keith. We used to have a regular babysitter. But I was still that not very confident person. I still had in my mind, I only had 4 O-levels. And all these people here have got degrees of one sort or another. And I could never be like them. That was my feeling. And I knew God loved me, but it was very much, I think, up here. But there was a steady growth, and I began to experience more and more. And then in 1980, I became our vicar's secretary, all by a bit of accident, which I stayed for 12 years doing and absolutely loved. And I think when we got to 1984 and John Wimber came over here, we went to the first John Wimber conference, and having sort of had a taste of the Spirit and things of the Spirit, I think I got into a sort of an acceleration at that point, because we went to the meetings there, and I just felt the presence of God in such a new and vibrant way again. And I think I began to see that it was just the way that God spoke to me about how much he loved me, how much he wanted to be with me. And it was almost like, this is his love language to me. This is how he speaks to me. This is how he tells me what he thinks about me. It's not in words, but it's just like when you just love being with someone and you can just sit with them and you just don't actually have to say anything. But it was just that thing. So we went to lots and lots of Wimber conferences, and then got into prayer ministry at church. And again, it used to be, well, I think those people are a bit better at it than me. Let them go and do it first, and I'll do it when I have to, you know. But it was still on this learning curve. And then in May 94, Toronto had broken out, the revival there in the January, and God just picked us up and took us there in the May. And we had such an amazing experience of his presence there. And I just saw tongues of fire and all sorts of things there. And it was just another sort of like acceleration of seeing what God was like and just knowing more of his presence. And again, a few years later, we were off to Florida and the Lakeland Revival. And again, it was just more of knowing and being with God. And then we went to the Eastgate Evening School, which I know several of you have done, and began to not only experience him, but get teaching all about our identity and who we are. And that all together, I think, began to give me more confidence in who I am. And I think I'm so glad we did a series on identity, because I think it's so key in our lives. So that's just a little potted history. And then I said to Bimby, I haven't got amazing things to share. And he said, well, that's all right. And I did share something with him last week following his talk in the morning. And he said, well, just share that and anything else that comes, and then Keith can fill in anything else if there's wanted. So I'm just going to come and I'm just going to share what I can share. And how do I hear God? I am not somebody who finds sitting very quiet and listening for God's voice. I could sit for a while and then my mind is like this and that. And I've beat myself up about it so many times, because we hear about it and it's a wonderful thing to do. But I just find it quite hard. I find soaking in that, just being quiet and laying. I find that quite hard. And sometimes you think, oh, I can't admit that, because this is what people say we should do, and this, and so I've had a real battle over that. It's not easy. I don't see pictures. I ask the Lord for things. I don't see pictures, but maybe one day I will. And I mustn't use that as a cop out to say that's not me. I must still pursue God for these things, I think, and still ask him. He may show me things in that way. He may not. But it's just how I am at the moment. So there's a verse in Galatians 3:15 that says, brothers and sisters, let me take an example from everyday life. So I'm just going to give you some examples of everyday life. I'm an ordinary person. Keith was talking this morning about non-schooled, non-titled people, but they've been with Jesus. And I hope that might come through for me. The way I hear generally from the Lord is that I just have these thoughts that come, and generally they come in two ways. I might be doing something and suddenly somebody's name, a friend perhaps who lives way, way away, will pop into my mind. That's strange. Generally, I just sort of hold it, take not a lot of notice because I don't get much else, and put it on the burner. But then maybe later in the day, the name pops back again, or maybe it doesn't pop back till the next day, but it's one of those things that just won't go away. And I know that God's trying to tell me I need to be in touch with that person. And 9 times out of 10, there's a reason for it. And so I've learned that when that happens, I need to do something about it. It's very easy to say, oh, I'll phone them tomorrow, or I'll do it tomorrow. But I need to be more disciplined, say, no, I think God's speaking, and this is, so I must do it. Occasionally, it's just popped into my mind straight away when I'm doing something and it's something I have to do immediately. I can remember one day coming home from when I worked as a vicar secretary, came home on the bus. Normally I'd walk home, 2.5 miles from Twickenham to home, and I'd been into Richmond shopping and I'd got the bus. And about halfway home, back in the Twickenham area, God said, get off the bus and visit Joan. Well, I'm on my way home, you know, still late. No, get off the bus and visit Joan. So off the bus I got, visited Joan, and she opened the door, and she said, she was our youth leader's wife, and she opened the door and she said, oh, I've just been praying somebody would call. And I thought, oh, thank you, Lord, I got it right. But it's just being aware of those little thoughts that so easily you can think, oh, that's just me. And I've just learnt that sometimes it's not just me, it is God trying to tell me something. But usually a thought comes with a real certainty and conviction that what God said is going to happen or is a definite thing. And it almost comes like you would talk about a gift of faith, that whatever the circumstances are, whatever you go through to get to that point, I believe it's going to happen. And so I was just going to give you a few stories from recent years of how that's happened. A very simple one, really. It's not a great thing, but Keith looked at training for ordination on and off for years, and all that time I used to think, oh no, I can't do that life. It's the unconfident Jenny rose up again, and I can't be in that role, and oh no, no, no. And every time he came back and said no, I go, oh good, you know, that's good. But then we moved churches for a good reason, and Keith and I met with the vicar, and he was just talking about moving Keith's license as a reader over to the church. And it was one Saturday morning, and he said, I've got a challenge for you, Keith. Keith went, oh, right, okay. He said, what about ordination training? And a yes exploded in Keith, and amazingly, a yes exploded in me. And I thought, God, what are you saying? But I knew it wasn't from me. I knew it wasn't just me thinking, okay, I'll go with this because, you know, this is what he wants to do. I knew it was God saying, yes, now is the time, you'll be all right. And it was just amazing. And in 4 weeks, Keith had everything sorted. Church of England? And so at the end of his curacy, we had to look for somewhere for him to do a curacy. And that took quite a long while. We prayed about what we were looking for, and we kept putting off places that we didn't think were right. And then suddenly this curate's place came up in Essex. And Keith was called for an interview, and me to go as well. And we went one Sunday and met with everybody. And after lunch, they said, well, we'll give you a drive around the parish and we'll show you the house that the diocese are trying to buy, because they hadn't had a curate before. And they took us down the road and said, that's the house. And I looked and thought, it's all right, ordinary house, fine. And we went home, and then Keith got offered the job the next day. And then a little bit, this was sort of February time, a little bit down the road, we got this message, oh, the house has gone off the market, and they're looking at another house way, way down the other end of the parish, which would have been totally wrong place for us to be. And I suddenly got this thought, no, you're going to live in that house. And I thought, oh, right, okay. So I think, thank you, Lord. And so they kept saying, oh, we're well into looking at this other house, and they were doing this. And then I said, kept saying to Keith, we're not going to live there. We're going back to that other house. And then again, a little bit down the road, the vicar there rang up and he said, oh, actually, that other house has come back on the market. And so they've dropped the other house. They're now buying this house. And we had to wait until September, didn't we, to move in. So we spent the whole summer travelling as a curate back and forth to Essex, 40 miles on a Sunday. But it was fine. And the day I walked into that house, it felt like home. I just knew this was where we were meant to be. And it must be a thing about houses, because before Keith was a curate, we lived in West London, we lived in Isleworth, and we had a house. And just as he finished his curacy, God was very good to us. We finished the mortgage on the house, and we were looking to rent it out while we were elsewhere. We had a tenant in there for 10 years, the 10 years that Keith was curate and vicar. And we thought, well, we're looking now towards retirement, and we want to sell the house so that we can be a cash buyer when we move. And we were very conscious that somebody that had been in this house was... she'd been there such a long time. We didn't want to just give her a short time to leave. It didn't seem very fair. It had been her home. So we gave her a nice long time to find somewhere else. And we put it on the market. And we had lots and lots of interest. And we got 6 offers on it. But they were all below what we'd been asking. And just as we'd been praying about it, and Keith and I were discussing, should we go and take one of these offers, God said to me, you're going to get this amount for the house. I thought, oh, right, okay. And it wasn't anywhere near what these offers were. So we said to the estate agent, no, we're not going to go with those at the moment. And then suddenly this young couple appeared and said to the estate agent, we'd like to have a look. We've just lost a place in Acton. We've got a mortgage sorted, and we'd like to go and look at this house. So we said, yeah, you know, send them round. They went and looked at it, and they said, oh, we really like it, and they put an offer in. And the estate agent said, oh, that's really below the offers we've already got. No, we can't accept that. And in one move, they offered another £25,000, and guess what? They offered the exact amount that God had told me. And we just praised him for that. So it's just learning those things. At the same time as going through that process of selling the house and that couple, I was diagnosed with cancer of the womb and the lining of the womb. Fortunately, it was quite a low-grade cancer. And the amazing thing was, I wasn't a bit worried about the cancer. I was more worried about the operation. And I kept thinking, oh, I don't really fancy this operation. I had to have a hysterectomy. And one night, I was asleep, and suddenly I woke up with this incredible panic. And it was just a real panic I knew that wasn't right. Because it was the most stupid thing that I thought. I woke Keith up and I said, suppose I wake up from the operation and I can't move. And I thought, where's that coming from? That's such a silly thing to say. And he said, don't be silly, you know. I thought, ah, and I just got myself in such a state. And then I just said to the Lord, I just need your peace. I just need to hear from you. I just need to receive from you. And I know that, you know, he speaks to me in this sort of like love language of peace. And he just again bathed me in this peace. And he said, Psalm 27, verse 1 and 2. And they became my verses. And the verses said, the Lord is my light and my salvation. Whom shall I fear? The Lord is the stronghold of my life. Of whom shall I be afraid? And I held on to those. And I went to the hospital, I had the operation, I knew that everything was going to be all right. I just didn't worry at all. I had a lovely consultant, and he came to see me after the operation, and he said, it was boringly straightforward. And I said, I do boringly straightforward. But he said, obviously we have to do some washings and tests and all that. I said, okay, that's fine. And I came out of hospital, and the oncology nurse said, I'll ring you when the results are in. Okay, that's fine. And we actually had a holiday booked. And so after a couple of weeks, we went on this holiday. It wasn't far away. And she rang up while we were away, and she said, "Oh, the first results are in, and they're really good, you know, everything's fine." And I said, "Oh, thank you." And I thought, "Oh, gosh, I didn't sound very excited, did I?" So she said, I'll be ringing again in about a week with the okay. And I said, "Okay, I better sound a bit more excited next time." So the next time she rang, I said, "Oh, that's wonderful news. I'm really excited." But it's again, it was that certainty that God put in me, just giving me that peace, giving me that those verses, that I just knew that everything was all right. And I can't describe it in any other way. It's just a knowing so deep down. So I can't say that I could tell you how it happens. It's just how it happens for me. The other thing is that Keith said I should talk about was words of knowledge. I'm afraid I'm a bit like this with words of knowledge. I should pursue them more. And they don't come to me in any sort of form of picture. They don't come in any pain. Keith gets pain in part of his body. But I just generally say to the Lord, is there anything you want to do? Is there anything that you specifically want to highlight and do today? And generally, they don't come at that moment. They might come a little bit afterwards. And I just get, again, a thought come in. Sometimes I would just wait a minute and I'll just go through the body almost, you know, thinking eyes, nose, ears, and sometimes something just really sort of highlights to me and God says pain in that place or something like that. Sometimes I think, oh, is that me? Which I did a lot in the beginning. It's so easy to think it's you. But I think it's learning how God speaks to you and just going with it. And sometimes, yes, we'll get it wrong. Sometimes we'll not be hearing it. We'll be ourselves. But I think that's the part of risk. That's the part of walking with God. That's the part of stepping out. And I might have got all this wrong tonight, but I'm stepping out and I'm just giving it as I am. And I think... if the one thing I've learnt on the way is that just that being in God's presence, experiencing him, is a very important thing in me. And that's the thing that's brought into me who I am and more confident in just being the person he's made me to be, just going with the ways that he speaks to me. So often I've seen people and they've explained something and said, this is how you know I do it. And I think it's wonderful. And I've tried it, it hasn't worked. And it's so easy to go, well, that's not for me, I can't do that because I've tried it and it hasn't worked. But it might not be the way that God wants to speak to me. It might not be the way that God wants my attention. And I have to learn that. It doesn't mean that I don't pursue these different ways, but it means that I have to just be alert to the way that he talks to me. And back to that another verse that we do quote, that in Job 33:14, God does speak, now one way, now another, though man may not perceive it. And I think God's speaking to us all the time in different ways, and we just have to perceive it in the way that we feel that we connect with God. Yes, I try and learn from others. Yes, I try and... try different ways, I try different things, but I have to pick up on those things that I've learnt that really work for me. So I think that the one thing that I wanted to sort of really bring out tonight is to just say that we're all different and we all hear in different ways. Don't get stuck on one way. Don't get stuck on a way that perhaps one person has shared with you. Yes, give it a go, give it a try. It may be the way God speaks to you. But just be open to so many different ways that God speaks. He may speak to you through creation. He may speak to you in all sorts of different ways. But just be open to how he speaks to you and go with it. Thank you.
Yes. Isn't that wonderful? Fantastic. I think I just want to just reinforce what she said. You know, we are all individuals. it's the miracle of creation. We're all made differently. And when God made each of us, he then threw the mold away, because there's nobody else like us. So thank you, darling. I think you were absolutely wonderful. You were so worried you wouldn't be enough, but you've gone on for half an hour, you know. No. Wonderful. Perhaps not the right expression. You didn't go on for half an hour. You spoke wonderfully for half an hour. I just thought it would actually be good. We're going to have another short time of worship, but as I was thinking about what we might do together, a couple of weeks ago, you may remember, I did a listening exercise for each of us. But I thought tonight, if you feel able, there's no pressure, if you feel able, if we got into threes with people we didn't know, and, well, when I say we didn't know, we're not close to, then what I thought we'd do is that in that three, if we felt we were able, we would just share very briefly how we hear from God, or are trying to hear from God, or have learnt to hear from God, and then to ask him for one thing for one of the other people in the group. And if we do that, not for a long time, about 10 or 15 minutes, depending on how it goes, I think it's the emphasis is that we're being honest with each other, as Jenny has been so honest this evening, but also that we do ask the Lord, because as Jenny reminded us, he does speak to us. And often the only reason we don't hear is because we don't think he is speaking. But if we ask him, he will speak.